offered by a community member. That's been going on how long within this community? Anybody? The community meditation practice? 20 years? A good amount of time. That's really cool. And then afterwards, we observe that minute of silence. These are just a couple of the rituals that we have already that are hidden in plain sight. Thank you, Wayne, for that meditation, always beautiful, and for that wonderful, wonderful keepsake from your mom. I also have had a mystical experience with some sandhill cranes last year, just watching and listening to them calling back and forth to each other. We're talking about ritual and practices that we use to give our lives meaning and to mark transitions. The big idea today is that ritual is one of the ways that ordinary life and ordinary days and moments become spiritually charged. Or said another way, ritual does not make life sacred or meaningful. Ritual helps us notice what is already sacred. We're going to use that word sacred a little bit this morning, and that's another word that's kind of charged with some religious undertones, so you can just allow that word to mean for you whatever is most helpful. But at a basic concept, it means anything that is consecrated or set apart or recognized as spiritually or personally significant. This would be, I'm sure to Wayne, a sacred item, this gift that he received from his mom. Even though it's paper, it's a nice piece of art, but it has meaning far beyond its recognizable value in the art community. There's probably not a dealer out there who could offer him a price high enough to take it off his hands. Right? I would imagine. Try it, he says. I love it. Okay, so here's the big ideas we're kind of like floating around this morning here. This week is called Small Sacred Things. Small Sacred Things. Rituals for everyday life. So we're going to talk about how small practices can re-enchant ordinary moments. We're going to say how rituals help create thresholds between one way of attention or seeing and another, and how what we repeat becomes who we are. I want to start first with this quote from this book here, Ritual, by Maladoma Patrice Somme. Carolyn mentioned him in this book last week, and it was in the newsletter. I immediately picked it up and devoured it. It's a pretty short book, and he's got some fascinating things to say about ritual from a Western African indigenous perspective and a shamanic perspective. He says this. He says that ritual, community, and healing, these three are so entwined in the indigenous world that to speak of one is to speak of them all. Ritual, community, and healing. Within the indigenous perspective, he says they're synonymous with each other. Now, we did go through the definitions last week, so I want to kind of reiterate those. A routine is anything that we do. It's a repeated action that helps us function, from the way that we brush our teeth to, somebody mentioned this morning, and I'm glad that they brought it up, the way that we shave. I have shaved starting with the same side of my face for as long as I can remember. I've tried starting on the other side, and it felt wrong. It felt like my whole day was going to then unfold terribly because I had broken the laws of the universe. I don't know why. That's a routine. That's something I do to to help me function. Well, not really to help me function. It's just the way that I do things, but maybe the way I make my coffee in the morning or the way that I put on my clothes or start my day. These are routines. It's a repeated action that helps us function. And then a ritual is any action done with meaning or intention. So a ritual takes routine to a different level. It adds meaning and intention behind it. It's doing anything with meaning and intention. So something that starts out as a routine can become a ritual if you imbue it with meaning and intention. And then finally, a ceremony is a more formal communal ritual. It's something that we do together in community. And this book by Sommet talks a lot about the forms of community and how they impact ritual within this indigenous understanding. First part here is what we repeat becomes part of who we are. It was James Clear who said in Atomic Habits that every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become. The things we do repeatedly dictate the type of person we are becoming. You are the sum total of the choices you have made or the things that have happened in your life to get you to this moment here and now. But we also have the capacity to set new routines, new paths in motion. What we repeat becomes part of who we are. James Clear talks about the more practical elements of forming habits, good, healthy habits, because we know that you can have healthy habits, things that you do that help you function, and then you can have unhealthy habits, things that you do that harm yourself or others. So from a business or a personal well-being standpoint, you may read Atomic Habits to say, I'm going to make my life more optimized. I'm going to have more time in my day. I'm going to try to be healthier. And those are all positive things. We're going to try to get a little bit deeper, one layer deeper, because as a spiritual community, we're exploring how we can make choices to help us grow internally. And we said last week that rituals can be containers for growth and transformation. So every action you take is a vote for the type of person you want to become. If you want to become less angry and less reactive, choose rituals that help center and calm you. If you want to be more present with your loved ones, choose a ritual to help you focus your attention. If you want to complain less, develop more gratitude in life, choose rituals that help you foster gratitude. By the end of today, we're going to kind of leave with a little bit of homework for all of us to develop our own rituals. And these don't have to be big, grand things. Some rituals that we're going to talk about can take upwards of like 4 to 5 seconds. It can be short, simple practices, but something that's done repeatedly with intention can help focus our attention and create opportunities for growth and transformation. So the next idea here is that rituals help move us from one kind of attention to the other. We've talked before about how we have in our mind's eye this capacity called attention, and we can focus it like a camera lens on various things. We can up or reduce the exposure, the amount of time we're looking at it. We can widen or reduce the aperture, how much light and information we're letting in. Rituals help us focus and shape our attention, to move us from one type of attention to the other. Many people in pre-talk this morning mentioned coming to C3 or coming to the spiritual community as a regular communal ritual that they do that gives their life meaning, purpose, and helps mark the week. And I can identify with that. I think probably many of you could as well, that this is a place that you hopefully look forward to coming to, that you look forward to either hearing some great music, a questionable talk, some great bites afterwards, maybe some great art along the way. Like, there's always something interesting here, and this practice that we do on a regular basis helps focus our attention, and it helps mark our shift from one type of attention to the other. So maybe your week has been crazy and hectic all over the place. In the process of getting ready for C3 or getting ready for something that gives your life meaning and purpose, helps to ground you and calm you and mark a shift of attention, to mark a shift of focus and a way of being. Rituals help us do that. A friend of mine, and rituals can be large and small. Last week, Carolyn mentioned, and this is so true, that we in the West are starved for rituals and ceremonies to give our lives meaning and purpose. We are rather anemic in our forms of ritual because the most that we can point to are the things that we buy cards for at Hallmark, which are graduations and weddings and birthdays and funerals, and we've gotten so routine about those things that there's hardly any real ritual or meaning to it. We have to really invest that meaning to make it meaningful. So we have so many opportunities to form new rituals in our life. And a friend of mine this week shared probably one of the most beautiful ritual ceremonial gatherings that I've heard in a long, long time. He told me that he was going to a family member's party who was hosting a gathering celebrating 20 years since their failed suicide attempts. And it was a celebration of life. It was a celebration of the fact that 20 years had passed since an event that a lot of us in the West don't really even feel comfortable talking about, let alone memorializing, ritualizing. But how much better of an opportunity to mark than something like that? Some of us have marked failed attempts on our own life or brushes with death in the forms of tattoos on our body. That is a practice that is centuries and millennia old within humankind. Humankind mark ourselves and mark transitions and moments. Within the streams of Celtic spirituality, they talk about this idea of thin space, that there are places on this planet and places in time where the veil between this world and the next is thin, where it's almost like you can step from one to the other, where this world and the next blend together. And to experience rituals that connect you with a sense of place and time and community, it's an amazing thing. Some examples could be at the end of your workday, if you're carrying a lot of work stress, to take the ritual practice of hand washing and to wash your hands. And as you wash your hands, you say, "I release this workday," and wash it away. Before entering your home, you can pause at the doorway and ask, "How do I want to enter this space?" Before a difficult conversation, you can do a simple breathing practice. You can sit and place your hand on your heart and breathe, and you can remind yourself and say, "This person is not my enemy." You can ground yourself and center yourself before going into difficult spaces or conversation. Gratitude practices before and after meals. I grew up praying over every meal, as probably many of you did as well. And for a time, I was very, very glad, definitely, to not pray over meals. Like, I hated that. I hated praying over meals in restaurants as a kid when it felt like everybody was looking at you. even though probably in hindsight, we were probably the majority, everybody probably is like, oh, good job, they're praying over their meal. I hated that, and I needed to shed that for a long time. But I was just thinking as I was working on these notes this week that, you know, I miss not the idea of praying to a deity before a meal, but I miss the practice of focused gratitude, of stopping and acknowledging that I'm really, really grateful for this lettuce that may have been grown maybe even a state away, depending on the hydroponic place and the shipping systems. We to have vegetables and fruits that may not even be seasonal, to have access to all the diversity of food, just to center ourselves in gratitude. One way you could say it is that rituals are like flossing for your soul. It's not something we naturally tend to do. We tend to probably fall out of practice quite a bit, but it's something that's good for us. It's both preventative and helpful. Rituals are like flossing for your soul. They're intentional practices that you can do to mark transitions, to help grow yourself, to move through trauma, process trauma in your body. Back in 2010, I took my first trip to Nairobi, Kenya. And this is the Kibera slum, one of several slums in Nairobi that had hundreds of thousands of people packed in these steel, tin, and cardboard shacks that were incredibly dangerous to even walk through these alleys. You're stepping over raw sewage, and these metal corrugated sheets were rusted and could cut you at every corner, so you're kind of walking with your arms and legs in. And I met this one student who was in the program Compassion International, and I was there with Compassion and was meeting him. His name is Elliot, and he shared about his sponsor in the United States and the correspondence he had had with him. And here I was from the United States getting to meet him. And he was a fascinating guy. This is the inside of his shed house. And he was maybe about 18, 19 years old. He was just starting some college classes. And there were several different ritual things that he did. But before he left, he would touch this little handwritten note there on his way out the door, and he wrote, God loves me enough to feed me, bless me, and give me hope for the future. Amen. Can I tell you what it's like to read something like that and to see a ritual that's practiced by somebody living in the slums of Nairobi, doing daily ritual gratitude practices that help them center their attention on the fact that they have what they need to eat and live, even while living in a place that many of us would consider ourselves destitute if we were there. Rituals can reframe our perspective. Small practices can re-enchant ordinary moments. I say re-enchant instead of enchant because I think every ordinary, I think even the term ordinary moments is kind of a misnomer. I don't think there is an ordinary moment. I think every moment is extraordinary. Now, for sure, when you're waiting in line at the BMV and you're bored out of your mind, that moment may not feel especially extraordinary. I get that. But every moment has the potential to be charged with significance, with wonder. And simple practices can re-enchant ordinary moments or can cause us to recognize that this moment we thought was ordinary is no longer ordinary. Have you ever walked into an encounter, whether it's a spontaneous one or a planned meeting, a ritual of sorts, without even realizing as you're walking in that that next 30 minutes to an hour was going to leave a mark on your life that you would carry for decades. We often don't see the most transitional, powerful moments before they happen. Sometimes we're aware of that. Sometimes we are like, this is a big moment, and we feel it in our guts. A lot of the times, we only know it in hindsight when we look back. Small practices can re-enchant ordinary moments. Humans don't live by information alone. We need, we crave gestures and symbols and actions. We need containers for big moments like grief and joy and celebration and transition. But we can also carry the same attention-focusing rituals into everyday moments. Thomas More, who wrote Care of the Soul, a guide for cultivating depth and sacredness in everyday life. He said, to the soul, the most minute details and the most ordinary activities carried out with mindfulness and art have an effect far beyond their apparent insignificance. I love that the two things that he says mark something as important is the mindfulness that we bring into it and art. Beth did an amazing job recently giving us ways to see the world through different lenses by adopting different ways of seeing and seeing ordinary things and objects as being extraordinarily charged, as being incredibly sacred. And Thomas More says the same thing. To our soul, even the most minute details, the most ordinary activities, if they're carried out with mindfulness and art, have an effect far beyond their apparent insignificance. You may have a little handwritten note, something written on a bar napkin. You may have a little hand-drawn crayon piece of art from a child that is priceless to you. Not because it has any inherent value, but because it was incredibly sacred, because it marked something meaningful. It could be something you hold from a time or place. I have a rock that I carry around quite frequently. It's a stone that I picked up from the shores of Iona, Scotland. That's probably one of my most treasured possessions. Every time I hold it, it's just a beautiful rock, but when I hold it, I'm reminded of where I was. In the Daguerre world that Somme describes here in this book, Ritual, he says, ritual keeps our visible life connected to the invisible life. Ritual is a way that we allow the deeper parts of life to emerge and allow us to live from a deeper, truer part of ourselves. Routines are helpful for living. Like, we need things like calendars. Like my Apple calendar, if I don't have it, I'm lost. It's hard for me to function with all of the various things happening in my world right now. Routines are helpful. They help us function. But ritual kind of takes us to a deeper level, and it helps connect our invisible life, our soul work. And you can choose any language you want, but many of the great wisdom teachers refer to this inner self as soul, or your truest self, your consciousness. And the work that you spend growing and developing that is worthwhile. And ritual helps you do that. In the Daguerre world that Somaya describes, ritual is not just simply an occasional spiritual activity, like what we would tend to think of it here in our Western mindset. Most of the rituals you can think of that you've participated in beyond the forms that we do here at C3 probably have months, maybe even years in between them. You may participate in some very meaningful things that happen on a regular basis. There were a couple examples that were given this morning of someone who reads a new book with each season and has read some of the books upwards of 40 times, which is a pretty cool way to mark the season. I've begun marking the solstice and the equinox in ceremonial forms with rituals. It marks the beginning of a season, the end of a season. Somebody mentioned the mezuzah within the Jewish tradition of something that was nailed to the door that contained some handwritten Jewish scriptures that was touched or kissed on the way out the door or coming in. Very similar in some ways to what Eliud did in Nairobi with his little handwritten thing was a mezuzah of sorts, something that as you're going out into the world, a way that you touch to ground yourself and remind yourself where you're going, where you're coming from. So the work this week would be this, to choose a ritual to work on for yourself. And it can be simple, it can be short, it can be temporary. I'll give you a few examples, but hopefully you can come up with some on your own as you do some thinking. One would be the idea is to match your ritual with what you need. To spend some time and ask and say, what does myself need right now? Do I need peace? Do I need grounding? Do I need to foster more gratitude? To match your ritual with what you need. Or another excellent source of inspiration, as David White said last week, that routine is disguised ritual. The things you do on a daily basis already can be excellent inspiration or connection with ritual. If you don't go a day without a cup of coffee, there's your first form of routine that can be ritualized with a practice. Something as simple as just repeating a mindfulness or gratitude practice that connects you to maybe the farmers who grew it and gives you a sense of global perspective. Whatever it is that you need. Another example is to put your hand over your heart in an affirmation ritual. What does your heart need to hear? Saying things like, I can meet this day and this moment with kindness. Or I offer myself the same compassion that I offer to others. Or mine right now, my mantra for this season is this. I trust the season that is shaping me. I move slowly with what I am becoming. I've turned that into a mantra, a refrain, a chant that I can say over and over. And just the simple practice of stopping, placing my hand over my heart, breathing. And I say, I trust the season that is shaping me. I move slowly with what I am becoming. It's a ritual that can ground me. There's transition rituals, like we said, the doorway pause. You can put a sticky note. You can put a quote, a picture, anything above your doorway that as you're walking and leaving, you can touch and attach a ritual, a practice with that. Taking a breath before entering and ask, how do I want to enter this space? Finally, is a gratitude ritual before meals, before bed. And as Jen comes back up, I'll just leave you with this last quote here from Melodoma Patrice Sommet. He writes a lot about, and we're going to get into a little bit more, about the connection between community and ritual. But he says, without a community, you cannot be yourself. The community is where we draw the strength needed to affect change inside of us. Within the indigenous perspective that he speaks of, community is the chalice that holds, it's the container that holds the rituals that allow us to affect change and growth and transformation. So thank you for listening, for being part of this conversation. We'll continue it afterwards and talk back. But let's welcome Jen back up there this morning.